Billy Flanagan.
Billy Flanagan.
Billy Flanagan.
Billy Flanagan.
I'm milling about with Cullen Douglas. He is the director, and Billy Flanagan, he is the star of The Happiest Man on Earth. Welcome, guys.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you, Robin.
I feel like I'm in Walt Disney World.
Well, you look like you're at Walt Disney World. I just left there.
So you're still working there. That's so wonderful.
Yeah. I'm in my 41st year of employment as an entertainer at Walt Disney World.
Amazing. Well, I want to get to that. But first, I want to get the story of how the two of you met each other and what inspired this.
Okay. Well, Cullen actually worked at Disney, but we never met there. And I'm going to let him take it over from here.
Actually, over 20 years ago, almost 25 years ago at this point, I worked as a performer as well as an associate show director down at Walt Disney World. And back then, even 25 years ago, the name Billy Flanagan was legendary. It was, people said it, and it was almost like they were making the sign of the cross every time they said it. It was like, okay, who is this Billy Flanagan? But we never actually crossed paths. And then when lockdown happened at the beginning of the pandemic, I started to see, because I obviously still have so many friends who are performers out at Disney, on my Facebook page, I started seeing people talking about getting flanagrammed. And I quickly wrote and said, what's a flanagram? Do I want one? Is this a good thing?
Give it to me now.
And there were people like, no, Billy Flanagan, he's out there on his bike delivering these singing and dancing telegrams. And so I was able to reach out and get in touch with Billy. And I said, Billy, let's talk. And from there, and so I actually, Billy and I physically did not meet until the film was basically in its final cut. He surprised me out here in Los Angeles with my own flanagram.
I love it.
So, but now we're lifelong friends. So it's all good.
So Billy, I know you've been all over the world with this flanagram, maybe not the world, but at least 3,000 miles away.
Right. Yep.
So what an altruistic, wonderful thing to do. I mean, I wish I knew you then when I was going through my COVID lockdown.
I tell you what, it just really started out as I went to one person's house, and then from there it grew because she said I visited her and other people wanted the little pull up on your bike, ring the doorbell, back up. So we're socially distant, a little song and dance. And I always sang about how many miles it took me to get to their house to see them. And then it just kind of grew from there, and everybody was requesting them. And I was happy to honor the requests because I wasn't doing anything. You know, I was home on lockdown and I'd much rather be outside and being active and entertaining. So as people say, you know, I found my stage. It just wasn't at Walt Disney World.
Did you wear like one of those little GoPro things and you were taping everything? Because we see a lot of that in the documentary.
Yeah, I did not. No. People, they had a crew follow me around one day. But I just brought my own camera, my phone with me, which would give me directions on where I was going, because some of the places were 42 miles from my house on the other side of Disney where I never go. So I'd always have my phone with my GPS on it. And then I would always leave by taking a selfie with the people. So it was really, really a fun thing. I never thought it would get as far as it did. It was just kind of my way of spreading a little happiness and joy and funniness and people rolling their eyes going, oh, typical Billy.
But it was so heartwarming, and it's so heartwarming to see it on this documentary. And Cullen, when you were interviewing people, were you surprised that they were as surprised that they got a flanagram?
It became just during those days of lockdown, it became like a badge of honor. I mean, people were like, I got flanagrammed, you know, and people were just waiting, you know, and then like, as you see in the film, people were baiting Billy going, well, you know, I'm in Texas. I'm sure I'm never going to get one. And then sure enough, Billy, would deliver one. By the end of it, and I know Billy, you're still delivering flannograms. I saw on Instagram the other day that you welcomed a newborn baby into the world the other day. But at this point, or rather as sort as encapsulating his travels, he traveled over 7,000 miles on his bike delivering these
Unbelievable.
flannograms. So that in itself was enough for me to say to my producing partner, Randy Goodwin, look, we need to make a film about this. After talking to Billy, I discovered that there was a deeper narrative that if he was going to be open to it, we could explore, and that perhaps the film could get elevated and perhaps actually make a difference, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, documentaries, as you make them, they always twist and turn, and the story always changes. So, Billy, were you shocked in a way that it changed to the degree that it did?
I was so pleased that Cullen offered to tell my story because I never really talked about a lot of the things that have happened in there. The bullying happened in school when I was younger, wanting to be a performer, wanting to be a singer, wanting to be a dancer. And it wasn't cool back then in the, early 70s to late 70s. And so that was kind of traumatic that I had gone through, and with the help of one of my teachers who was in the film, and I just cried when I saw her in there. I kind of overcame that obstacle and continued my journey on what I really wanted to do, be an entertainer. And then, later on in life and coming out and all that whole story, I never talked about that either. It was a very private thing that just it was a thing that happened in my life, and people were very respectful of my privacy. So it wasn't something I was so forthcoming about. But after speaking with Cullen and Randy and telling them the story, Cullen so graciously asked me to ask my family if it would be okay that we do this in order to help other people who may be struggling, those kids who are being bullied, somebody who is closeted and is wondering, do I come out? Do I not? What do I do? And just knowing that somebody else is going through the same thing you're going through, I think helps. And I am all about helping people. I'm all about bringing smiles to people's faces. And that's kind of like what I feel my purpose is. So Give Kids the World, that's one of my favorite things about working for Disney, Make-A-Wish Foundation and Give Kids the World when they come. Just seeing somebody in the audience with that pin on and me wanting so desperately to reach out to them somehow and just bring that little bit more magic than they would have received if we ignored it. Cullen told my story better than I ever could. He was brilliant at doing it and then weaving the flannograms and the bullying and my Disney career. And that, I mean, just the way that it was edited and the time that him and Jeremy Glee spent on getting it just right, seeing it in the theater for the first time with an audience there watching it and having people laugh at the stories. And then you heard them sniffling and crying and then laughing again and then crying again. It's that emotional roller coaster that any film would love to be. And it was just fantastic seeing it.
So, Cullen, what would you say were some of the gems that you discovered along the way?
I think it was the accessibility of Billy's family to talk about some of the hard stuff. That really presented it as sort of like just a wonderful embarrassment of riches that, I had hours and hours of his family talking about that time period. The other thing that was really quite exciting for myself was the fact that, so many of the people interviewed in the film are entertainers. And so here I was in the middle of lockdown and the pandemic saying, I would like to put you on camera to talk about Billy Flanagan. So I, in essence, was offering them a stage, and I had these great heartfelt conversations with people that, I jokingly think that if I had been doing a documentary about, say, some factory in middle America where people weren't accustomed to talking on camera, that I probably would not have gotten the depth that I got. And then I think the other thing, as you were pointing out, how the documentary, when you're in post, continues to shift and mold and find its narrative. We had to take a hard right turn when Disney was forced to lay off and eventually fire 720 performers. And Jeremy and I recognized that if we don't talk about this, there's going to be this huge elephant in the room. And what was such a wonderful gift again as a filmmaker was circling back to three of our sort of heroes in the film and revisiting them a year later. And every single one of them saying, you know what? If Disney calls and offers me a job, I will come back. I will do this. And it was such a great thing because I wanted the film to be a love letter to not only Billy, but to live performers everywhere. And then in essence, it turned into the live performers' love letter to Disney and the culture that's been created there. Because, you know, there are many theme parks all across the country. Disney is different and people know it, you
Oh
know?
yes, there's nothing like it. So Billy, what did it feel like to you to sort of go back into your archives and see all those old video performances that you
It was
did?
great. You know, what a great project for me during COVID as well. When I wasn't biking, I came home, I came up to my office, and I was putting old videotapes that I had onto the computer and then sending them off to Cullen and Randy to say, if whatever you want to use, you know, this videotape was taken by my wife. This videotape was taken by a friend. This was so getting permission for all of those and usage of all of them. And who was that in there? And oh gosh, I forget her name. And you know, taking a picture and sending it to people, say, what is her name? I forgot. I worked with her in 1982. So it was really, really fun to sit there, especially the family videos and things. Because, you know, after you do it, you put it in a box. You don't really sit there. You might watch it once, but going back and watching that, I would send little snippets off to my kids and say, oh, look at this, how cute you were. It was fantastic.
So Cullen did a lot of interview footage go on the cutting room floor. I mean, what happened?
It unfortunately did. We interviewed over 80 individuals for the film, and only around 40 actually were it included in the final cut. And that had nothing to do with the interviewers themselves. But you know, as a journalist, sometimes you have to cut. And, you know, I couldn't make a 5-hour documentary. But that being said, we have all of the footage and we have begun discussions about creating a docuseries.
Interesting.
Because there's still so many stories to be told that people shared with us, but I just didn't have the real estate to be able to clear it. And it's funny, you know, Billy's talking about the highs of being able to use all of these different archival videos and things like that. What was a high for him turned into such a stressful thing for me on my end. You know, I have made my living thus far primarily as an actor and as a writer, and I've directed some, but this is my first feature film. And as a documentarian as well. And it was such a new territory. And I didn't realize going into it that the clearance that was needed
Oh, yeah.
for it was incredible. Literally, I have memorized every single frame of this film because I needed to identify who was who and who owned the rights of it. And so I shared this with a friend that getting a film like this through clearance was sort of like jumping out of an airplane naked and being asked to get dressed before you could pull the cord. It was like, here's the earth and it's coming straight for you, and you're putting on your socks and shoes as best you can and calling Billy at 11:30 going, look at this video. Who is the dancer third from the right? You know, and Billy going, I don't know. You know, it was an exciting time. We'll call it that.
Well, they worked so hard, let me tell you. And I appreciate you calling me the star of the film. I would call myself the subject. I was so humbled that they found it interesting enough to put this on, but so excited that my friends got to be a part of it and be in it and get to see themselves and their kids got to see them. And that was so exciting.
show people are such a unique breed, and Billy, you're such a unique breed. I don't know anybody as happy as you. Are you really that happy?
I really am on a daily basis. I always say I'm employed, I'm insured, I'm healthy. What don't I have to be happy about? Everything's great. I
That's a
do a
good
lot of
point.
reading. I do a lot of podcast listening, a lot of meditating, just to help myself, take anything that comes my way that's negative and try to turn it into a positive, like I did with COVID. I can't just sit. My house was in dying order. Everything was all set. It's like, what am I going to do now? I'll go visit people. I'll go try to make people laugh. Or so it worked out unbelievably, but it was something that I needed to do to make myself feel like I had a purpose. And I didn't, I don't play video games. I don't watch TV much. I have to be outside. I have to be active.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Cullen, what do you feel was like the driving purpose for this documentary? What did you want audiences to take away from it?
I think a couple of things. I feel like the takeaway is maybe recognizing what a simple, small act of kindness can do and how it can reverberate and really change people's perspective. It really kind of goes to that paying it forward, paying for the person behind you in the drive-through, that kind of those little simple acts. And Billy's example of, just getting on his bike and trying to get exercise and then trying to brighten somebody's life, how he was doing it in such a selfless way that it really changed people's DNA in those early days of the pandemic. And so that at the base level would be it. And then I think in just a bigger overarching thought would be that, there's so much division in our world right now. There's so much hurt. There's frustration, there's anger. And at the end of the day, it feels like, if we can just kind of recognize that we're a lot more alike than we are different, maybe we could get through this a little bit better. And I felt like the more specific that I got with Billy's story, the more accessible it became, because people, they see people when they go into a theme park like Walt Disney World and they see a performer up there. And they see them for that 20-minute show, and then they go get their fast pass and they go ride a ride. They don't realize that that performer might be married, in a relationship, have a family, have a mortgage, have worries and doubts, just like the rest of us. And so it felt like, hey guys, we're all going through, COVID was a real leveler. It kind of, reset the thing. I joked with my wife that, when the industry shut down as a whole, it was the first time that I wasn't necessarily jealous of another, actor because we were all out of work.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt wasn't working, so I didn't have to feel bad
It
about it
leveled the
either.
playing field. Yeah,
It
that's so
really did.
interesting. I felt the same way between journalists and actors. Here we were doing these Zoom interviews, and it just totally leveled the equality of just being people chatting with each other. So, Billy, I want to talk a little bit about your beginnings. Did you want to be a Broadway singer dancer? Was that your dream?
It was. I went to the Boston Conservatory of Music. I have a Bachelor of Fine Arts in musical theater. And I got the job at Disney my senior year in college. And I thought, I'll go there, I'll stay a year, and then I'll audition for Broadway and do all these things. And my first year at Disney, I got to do so many things. On top of being a kid of the kingdom, which I was, I danced in front of Cinderella Castle, which you see in the background. And over in the Tomorrowland stage. And then we got to do this huge 4th of July spectacular. Then we went into rehearsals to open Epcot, which was not even, it was Walt's thought years ago that you saw on the Wonderful World of Disney on Sunday nights. And now I'm standing here in front of it on opening day as a performer, one of the 12 main performers that did that. So after that, then Christmas came and we opened a brand new Christmas show in front of Cinderella Castle that was huge. And I thought, this place is magical. You were just always doing something different. And then once Epcot opened, I went over to World Dancers for a little bit, went back to the Magic Kingdom to do a show called Fantasy Follies, and then they made me what they call a park swing. So I learned every show in both parks, and wherever they needed me, I would go. So in 1986, I only had 6 days off the whole year, but I was doing what I loved to do. And in the meantime, I ended up getting married. I had, kids at the time, and I became such a workaholic that, things at home weren't great because my wife was home with two babies. So I asked to be transferred out to Disneyland to do a show that I had just opened at Walt Disney World. They were opening in Disneyland. Then I went back to Walt Disney World and it picked right back up again. As soon as I got back, it was teach Billy this show, teach him this show, because I didn't say no and I learned quickly. So it was something that they could just, here, we need someone to learn the show in 3 days. I'll do it. And I did. I went home and I worked on it while I wasn't in rehearsals and I opened the show. I opened Tarzan Rocks in a day and a half. I learned the entire show and it was something that it was a great reputation to have and it kept me really, really busy. So I've had a career like no other. And obviously, I'm still here. I just signed contract number 41. And because
Amazing.
we're only offered a 1 year contract. So after that
Amazing.
1 year, you have to be reassessed or re-audition or so it's very, very competitive. And now I'm competing with people that are 40 years younger than me.
Babies, you're competing against.
Babies. But that's why I try to stay in shape. I try to be as youthful as I possibly can.
That's why you ride 3,000 miles a day. So, Cullen, do you think you want to do different types of documentaries moving forward? Did you have
I
fun?
think what I discovered, I had a yes, at the end of the day, despite jumping out of airplanes naked, I had an immense amount of fun. I think like anything, what it helped me to do, just in the same way that Billy found his Flanagrams, this film found me in that it was my creative outlet when I could no longer be on a set. And it allowed me it gave me the reason to wake up in the morning when there really wasn't a whole lot of things to wake up for. And so, I would come in, I would start to work and all that kind of stuff. It reminded me that I am a storyteller, whether I'm directing a documentary or writing a narrative or acting in something, that that's what I'm supposed to be doing. And so, I joke, half serious about the docuseries. The thing that amazed me, not to take anything away from Billy, because he is extraordinary and his story is incredible. But what it reminded me too is that we all have stories, every single one of us. And so it's a matter of shining a light on it. And through art, we can sometimes heal and we can grow. And that's what I just want to keep doing.
I love to tell stories as well in a different way. My stories have to have music in them and be singing, dancing, yada, yada,
Jazz
yada.
hands.
Everybody always says, how come you're not auditioning for Star Wars? I'm like, it wasn't a musical. I need that. I love that the Broadway stage. And, I guess it's never too late as well to, if my thing doesn't work out at Disney, I'm alone now. I can go to New York and my kids are grown and gone. Go to New York and try my time there at on Broadway.
Your next contract talk, you just take in the DVD of Billy Flanagan, The Happiest Man on Earth, put it on the table and go, are there any questions here?
Thank you so much for joining me. Many, many more storytelling along the way for both of you.
Great. Thank you so
Thank
much
you.
for having us
Thank you
and
for
thank you for
having us,
watching the
Robin.
film and promoting the film. I hope that people that do watch it go ahead and review it and rate it. Right now we're 100% on Rotten Tomatoes,
It's
which
wonderful.
is great. I'm
Congratulations.
glad you enjoyed it, but it really it was all Colin.
Thank
Subject,
you, Billy. But it was you.
brilliant.
So,
It's a
mutual
love
admiration
fest.
society.
Yeah.
It is.
Always news.
Always refreshing.
Always candid.
Always milling about.
Robin Milling delivers what celebrities are saying to you.